Hey, this is Ashley.
Hey, this is Marcy.
And this is School and Life, a weekly podcast about life, love, and occasionally libations. Make sure you're checking us out on Instagram at School and Life Podcast. That's at S-C-H-O-L-I-N Life Podcast. We post each episode's photo and episode notes. We often will tag the things that we shout out and connect you with the resources we talked about on the show. So make sure you do follow School and Life Podcast on Instagram at School and Life Podcast. So this week in mentoring moment, amidst a global pandemic, racial injustices that are regularly happening to us, but that many of us watched amidst, the weekend with George Floyd's murder, it just caused me to reflect on the work that I do, the work I do every day with women and work. And so often, in the fight for equality, whether that equality is related to race or sexual orientation or sexual identity or gender identity or economic equality, whatever it is, women are so often on the front lines. But in this week's video, I talked about the fact that Black women are not coming to save the world of work, and that it's not Black women's jobs to fix racism at work. And I just want to encourage every Black woman who listens to this show that works, particularly those that work in a predominantly white space, that racism is not yours to fix. You do not have to feel like you have to put racism on your back and resolve it in your workplace. Even if you are the chief diversity officer, even if you are the head of the diversity committee, even if people do come to you and look to you for leadership in this area, it is not your responsibility alone. You need partners and allies to dismantle a systematic oppression framework that white supremacy is, and from which racism flows. And so I just get so fearful when there is racial tensions and injustices in our country, because I know that the work will fall to Black women. And I just want to encourage every Black woman in a workplace, particularly those in a predominantly white workplace, to protect yourself, whatever that protection looks like. If that means folding into your partner, if that means connecting with your sister friends, you know, on this show, we always talking about connecting with a licensed clinical therapist, like whatever that means for you, I encourage you to focus on your wellness, because they will try you. They will ask you to read the diversity statement. They will ask you to write it and send it out. They will ask to attach your name to it so everybody can call you when they have a problem. I want you to protect yourself, because it is not yours alone to fight. It is not yours alone to battle. It is not yours alone. And while, yes, as a Black woman, you will be charged with taking up the mantle and doing some of the work, but it is not yours alone. Do not let racism exhaust you to the point that you can't do the job that you actually enjoy doing. And truly, if you are working in a place where you actually don't even enjoy, there's not a better time to make the transition to an employer, an organization, an institution that is better aligned with your values and skill sets. Because to be perfectly honest, white supremacy is everywhere. It permeates everything. There's going to be no employment opportunity that is going to be free from it. Even in entrepreneurship, we experience it because we don't own and engage solely by ourselves even then. However, there are organizations who are doing it right. There are ways to be better aligned. And I just want to encourage you to not exhaust yourself. Do what you need to take care of yourself. And in this week's video, I share what the cycle of racism in life and work looks like for the Black women, and share some strategies about ways to navigate these spaces in a better way that might allow you to center your own protection in a world where it's so hard to do that for Black women. So next up is I Digress. And in this week's episode, we're talking about the Black female superhero. We think it's so critically important that everyone knows that Black women are not coming to save them. When things go wrong, everyone turns to Black women to fix it. Sure, we're smart and capable, but we're also tired of fighting racism, sexism, white supremacy, and doing all of that alone. So on this week's episode, Marcy and I share why Black women aren't coming to save you and what we'll be doing instead. So Marcy, can you talk about where the Superwoman narrative comes from and sort of how we got to this place where Black women are regularly put into this Superwoman role?
Absolutely. I mean, we have to start with the age-old, same old of slavery, in a time where families were ripped and torn apart, particularly with Black men being ripped out of families. Black women were left to have to take on the role of caring for the whole family, being enslaved, caring for other people's families, caring for the white woman's families, teaching, leading, guiding, fighting. So it absolutely started there, and then it just continued on from that place. It continued on in just families continuing to be torn apart, single mothers being rampant and being kind of the norm within the Black community because of the historical trauma that we've experienced. And it's just been reinforced time and time again. Just over the years and the ways that families are run and operated, and even to the extent of now, like coming out of a time frame where women were so quote unquote supposed to be in the house. Like, I don't even know that that was ever a thing for Black women. Like, I don't know that we were ever actually allowed to have the luxury, if you will, of not working and of not being in the home, because we've always had to be in that provider role and that caretaker role and that getting things done role. But even now, shifting the dynamics of women being the most educated, like Black women being the breadwinners within the family, within the household, having to be mothers, having to focus on careers, having to do all of these things that will be able to sustain us. So like you mentioned earlier, like feeling as if the weight of the world and the responsibility of ensuring that things go well or that things go right in the world, it feels very heavy on us because there's such a large just discrepancy in the women who are out in the working world and who are out in families and who are out existing in society compared to Black men who are incarcerated. Like, there are so many different dynamics that play a role in the responsibilities that Black women end up taking on and end up carrying and end up being responsible for, that role just continues to be perpetuated throughout society and throughout all of our responsibilities. And so I often talk to Black women clients that come into my office about taking the cape off and seeing what it feels like to let go of some of that responsibility and some of that ownership of the responsibility. But it's something that's been passed down for generations and generations and generations, starting at slavery, for sure. What about you, Ashley? What would you add to where that narrative comes from?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think that the mammification of the Black woman it does absolutely stem from slavery, and it extends and permeates so much of our lives. You know, when I think about the women in the world of work, you know, the secretary is the woman, you know, the boss is the man. You know, the secretary is the assistant director, the boss is the director. You know, it just, it goes on and on and on, and it's the mammification of Black women that is so trying. And I think that the history of that narrative extends to our present day. You know, even, you know, when I think about, you know, when Black men die at the hands of the state, it is often Black women who are organizing protests, you know, for our liberation, right? And so it continues on. And I often find myself falling into the Superwoman narrative. You know, I have six younger siblings. I'm, you know, often the first person to help, often the first person to extend myself. You know, I think that, you know, whether it's with friends or, you know, in a friendship group, I'm often the first person to agree to go and help or host or give or whatever. Like, I'm definitely extended. And I fall into that narrative often. And I think it's most caused by my intense desire to serve. I'm really committed to service. I'm really committed to helping with intention. I'm really committed to like being available to people in a way in which I can serve them. And so that orientation means that I'm often overextended. And I think that my desire to help and serve is a symptom of the expectation that that's what I'm supposed to be doing as a woman, and particularly as a Black woman. What about you, Marcy? I mean, do you find yourself falling into the superwoman narrative? Like, we know what it is and we know it's a trap, but do you find yourself falling into it? And if so, like, what most often causes it?
Yeah, I definitely find that being the case sometimes. And I think that it's more so a knee-jerk reaction or a reflex than it is anything. There's constantly been a pressure, if you will, an expectation of this is the role that Black women are supposed to lead, or this is what I've seen modeled in my life. This is the role that people before me have taken on and engaged in. And so it's kind of like, it's just drilled into my head at this point, but I am also very intentional about it not being that way. And even like having to be intentional about that within a romantic relationship, I think is also very subtle, but also very important, of like, I don't want to have to try to fix it. Like, I don't want to have to try to take on everything. I don't want to have to be the person that is always thinking about the next step of everything. And so I think that, and I've mentioned this on the show before, is that I think that in us being so ingrained, that being a mentality that's so ingrained in us, is that we fall into the role. And so we continue to also perpetuate that expectation for ourselves. And so in a lot of ways, for me, it's been taking a step back and not taking on that role and being vulnerable and being open to allowing someone else to like take care of me or do the things that need to be done, so that I don't feel like I have to be in that role all the time, because I think that we get used to being disappointed and used to being let down, and so we rely on ourselves. Like, we've absolutely talked about that before. And so even being in a space where I can come out of that and not feel like I have to always just rely on myself is a challenge, but also is extremely it's extremely fulfilling. So I think it mostly falls out of habit. And I think that, like I was just saying, one of the ways to resist that is to step out of it. Like, I think it's a fallacy in a lot of ways that we have to be superwoman. I think it's not necessarily true that we have to do everything, but I feel like the only way that we even try is to step out of that role. I think that we often have a responsibility, like we feel a responsibility to take care of other people. And in a lot of ways, we think that if we don't take care of people, it won't get taken care of. If we don't do it, then it won't happen. And sometimes, yes, like sometimes the consequence of that is, yes, it won't happen. But is it the end of the world if it won't happen in order to teach somebody else that they can't actually do it? Because if we never let other people do it, they never know that they actually can. And then we keep going in this pattern, in this cycle. So I just really encourage people, like, take the cape off, even if it's for a moment, even if it's for an hour. Like, the world is not going to crumble down around you, but taking that step back just to see that the world won't crumble down around you allows you and affords you more opportunities in the future to be able to do that. But if you never take the cape off and you never resist that impulse and that desire to be in control and that desire to take responsibility for other people, you actually never see that it can work out in a different way. So what do you suggest? What are some ways that Black women can resist saving others?
I've been talking a lot about the shame of rest and the shame around not being productive and not getting things done. I suffer from that shame. I know so many Black women I know suffer from that shame. And so I just am encouraging Black women in particular to do a really radical thing, and that's nothing. Talk, like, just don't do anything. Like, what would happen if you just, like, didn't do anything for, like, 3 minutes? And when I mean nothing, I literally mean nothing. I don't mean, like do some yoga or do some deep breathing or, like, you know, watch some mindless TV. I literally mean nothing. Like, what would happen if you just did nothing? And I think that so many people, like, have no concept of doing nothing except for when they're sleeping. That, like, that the idea and the thought is radical. So I'm encouraging, like, radical nothingness. I've been, like, really on this trip for, like, a little minute now. And I just think it's powerful and it's radical. And I'm just encouraging everybody to, like, schedule 3 minutes of nothingness in your day and just see how you are transformed. So that's one thing. The other thing, and I'll never forget this, one of my close girlfriends, Ashley, she has a lot of nieces and nephews. And I remember when we were younger, let's say, like, 5, 7 years ago, like, she was really involved in her nieces and nephews' lives. These are her older sister's children. And, you know, they're growing up and they're, like, in all these sports and activities. And, like, they would have, like, always, like, need money, or I need my car fixed, or I need money for this, or prom, or I need to go here, I need to drop me off there. Can I live with you? Because I'm, you know, my mama on my nerves, blah, 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 blah. And I remember her, like, telling me she had, like, went to her pastor, you know, and she was just talking to him about it because she was feeling really frustrated, but she was also feeling like, oh, it's my job to serve and I'm supposed to help my, you know, nieces and nephews and blah, 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 blah. And her pastor was like, oh, okay. So, like, you know, like, have you prayed about it or whatever? And so she was like, yeah, you know, I've been praying about it and I'm just, you know, trying to be there for them. And she was like, oh, okay. So, like, you don't trust God to do his job. So you're just going to go ahead and step in and be God for them. Like, you're just going to go ahead and, like, do it, right? And she was like, no, I'm just trying to help, you know, like, God put it on my heart to help. He was like, God put it on your heart to pray for them, and then, like, God's gonna do the rest. Like, you, like, either you trust God or you're God. Like, so, like, when it comes to, like, being superwoman and trying to save everybody, it's like either, like, if, and this is obviously for folks who are believers, but, like, if you're a believer and you sort of believe in the divine, you the divineness of God and the fact that, like, God will provide, how then are you going to provide everything for everybody? Like, where is there room for God in those people's lives? Does God only extend to you? And then you are, like, God's, like, I don't know, like, redirect? Like, no, like, you just, you kind of got to let go a little bit. People cannot see God's love, God's provision, God's anything if you are the go-between. God doesn't need a middleman, sis. Back up. Just back up. Find some other productive ways to serve. But you don't have to be the conduit. God doesn't need help. And I think that the sooner we sort of get that and the sooner we release the shame of doing nothing, the better. The better. And so as we digress, Marcy, like, what are Black things that Black women can do instead of trying to save other people? You know, rest is what I would recommend, doing nothing. I also really believe in telling your story. That's why we podcast. That's why we invite other women on the show to share their story, you know, thinking about how you can infuse storytelling in your life and share your story and explain your work and your life to others. I think it's something because I think that often people come to you and they assume you can help them and that you're Superman because maybe that's the narrative that you're giving off. Like, people assume you got free time because you were always free to them. So if you start to tell people that you are busy and full or that you're overwhelmed and sad or that you need alone time, like, if you start telling that story and being honest about particularly with the people in your life about your story and who you are and what you need, I think that can radically change, your experience of trying to be a superwoman. And then I also think that leveraging what you already have is a powerful way to avoid saving others. So obviously this is something that I really believe in the space of career development. Like, I'm always telling women, like, stop credentials chasing, you know, stop trying to, like, go and pick up another certificate, another degree, another this, another that. Like, girl, if you go to one more training, how are you using the things that you already have? How are we leveraging the skills, the knowledge, the tools that we already have? This doesn't mean that we don't need more, that we don't have things to learn. We have not got it all figured out. But what I'm saying is, let's focus on leverage. Let's focus on intention about what we already have. And that's just definitely something that I'm encouraging women to do. But what about you? What are you, what could women be otherwise doing if they weren't always trying to save others?
One, saving themselves. I feel like in a lot of ways, when we start to put the attention on saving other people, we take the attention off of saving ourselves. And by saving ourselves, I just mean like taking care of ourselves. And I feel like self-care and taking care of yourself has been so, I don't even know, just like generalized, I guess, and just so just like taken and ran with it that it really misses the point. I literally mean like, who is a priority in your life and how do you show that person, which should, the response should be myself. How do you show yourself the same kind of love and honor and respect and safety that you try to show other people? And if you are spending more time focusing on saving yourself and providing a safety net and a foundation for yourself, then you really don't have the capacity to take care of and save other people so much, or you are so invested in saving and taking care of yourself that it is not an overwhelming thing to be taking care of other people. Because this isn't to say never be involved in the life of other people or never be involved in helping other people, but are you helping from a place of lack? Are you helping from a place of deficit? Or can you help from a place of overflow? And the only way that you can help from a place of overflow is if you fully invested in yourself so much that you are running over with the ability to help other people. So start with saving yourself. Also get down to the core of what is not allowing you to set boundaries with people, because that's really what it is. Like, if you are so invested in other people and so invested in taking care of other people and saving other people, you don't have boundaries. You don't have boundaries around your own life. You don't have boundaries in the relationships that you have with other people. And so what is keeping you from being able to set those boundaries? What from your childhood, what from any traumas that you've experienced in your life have set up this belief that you have to take care of other people, especially in spite of taking care of yourself? And so getting down to really doing some reflection, doing some meditation. I love that you brought up rest, because you're so right that like we don't rest. We don't sit still long enough in silence and with ourselves to actually truly know what we need and who we are. And so I really encourage people to sit and do that. If you're not going to go to therapy, which, you know, is always my first thing, but if you're not going to do that, at least find time to sit and chill and be restful. But focus on you, like focus on you and your relationship with God. Bring that attention back inward. That doesn't mean don't ever talk to other people and try to be there for other people, but definitely take that time to focus in on you, what you need first, and then from that place of knowing and that place of wisdom and courage, go out into the world and share that with other people.
And we digress. Next up is All Black Everything. Marcy, it's wonderful to be Black. It is a blessing. We are grateful for our Black identity. And I'm just so excited for all that you have for us. I love All Black Everything, and the segment is a commitment to centering Blackness, to centering our experiences and our stories. And, you know, I think white supremacy so often makes it feel like being Black is a punishment, is a sentence. And I know that in America right now, that's what it might feel like. But I'm just excited for this segment where we get to really highlight and talk about Black things in a meaningful way. So I just want to celebrate you for this segment and the intentionality of how the podcast like really centers our lives and our stories. And I'm looking forward to the dialogue you'll bring to the show today.
Well, thank you, Ashley. And that is definitely encouraging to hear, because y'all, for All Black Everything today, I'm tired. Like I thought about what I wanted to talk about, and I think the life just keeps happening and keeps bringing us things to talk about. And so I would like to start off just with a quote from James Baldwin that I've been seeing a lot and that I've seen a lot in the past. It says, "To be Black and conscious in America is to be in a constant state of rage." And I start there because this entire week I have felt like in a constant state of rage. And I think that a lot of, like, once we get to this past weekend, that rage has boiled over for a lot of people, and for us who have to continue like showing up in the workplace and going about our daily lives and doing the things that we need to do to be productive, particularly because a lot of us have to continue to interact with our white counterparts and employees and coworkers and friends and neighbors. We can't just necessarily express that rage, but it feels like it's always there. So I don't necessarily think that I have to highlight everything that has happened, but just for clarity's sake, we started off the week with hearing about Amy Cooper, the white woman who is also a dog abuser, but is inherently racist and recognized that she could weaponize her white tears, as we've talked about on the show before, but also just like this idea that she could threaten murder of a black man for telling her what to do, which is terrifying and completely disturbing and overwhelming. And then to continue on and experience the loss of George Floyd at the hands, at the knee of a police officer, and just the overwhelming frustration that exists in the midst of just those two things, right? Like just those two things, as we came to a close of the month of May, having to realize and be reminded, honestly, of just how little our lives and our sanity and our well-being and our existence matter is frustrating, to say the least, but also just like this pervasive sense of what are we supposed to do? Like, we kneel to protest, we protest silently, we get educated, we do all the things that y'all quote unquote say that we're supposed to be doing, which is why I know for Ashley and I, we really don't support respectability politics because it's bullcrap. The guy in New York was a Harvard graduate and his degree didn't change anything about this situation. So we do all of these things that we're quote unquote supposed to do, and yet we are still being murdered in the street. And to not even just that, but also, like, yes, we know that this has been happening forever, it's just being recorded now, but even the recording of it and the sharing of the videos and that going viral is extremely traumatizing, because not only do we hear about it, we also have videos where we can watch it and see it firsthand. And one of the things that my friend pointed out was that in one of the many articles and things that have been shared, it's just that, like, when was the last time you saw a white person be murdered on television, on a viral video? Have you ever seen that outside of a television show or a video game? And I really cannot ever recall a time where that has happened. And yet we continue to see the murders of black bodies constantly being streamed across our social media. And so we get to a place over the weekend where people are rioting and people are protesting, and there's so much discourse and dialogue around whether or not that's the right thing to do. You can't be burning down your own homes. We don't burn down black businesses. Right. Hello, quote unquote. And I'm extremely conflicted around that because, yes, like, no, I don't want violence, of course. But again, like, if we are in a constant state of rage, and we are literally like screaming and yelling and telling you all to stop killing us, and you are just turning your head and continuing to kill us, at some point that rage is going to boil over. And I'm sick of black people getting on TV and telling us not to riot and not to be violent and not to express this because Martin Luther King wouldn't have wanted this to be this way, which is not accurate in any way, shape, or form. So there's just like all of that. It's frustrating. And then for me, like, I am experiencing that, and then at the same time trying to hold space for people who are also experiencing it. And for it to be COVID-19 and to be impacting the world is one thing. For it to be continue murders of Black bodies and it to be impacting this smaller subgroup of the world is an entirely different thing. So I'm exhausted, and I've this whole week and this whole year and month and 10 years and however long it's been, it feels like it started with Trayvon Martin, but I'm sure that that was just a brink as well. And then also the erasure, like if we're talking about strong Black women, the erasure of Black women in this entire narrative and how their names are not being said either. I'm tired, like exhausted and constantly enraged. So Ashley, girl, tell me about how your week has been being Black.
I'll share a bright spot. So I watched Versus yesterday with Kirk Franklin and Fred Hammond. I cried. I shouted. Girl, spoke in tongues. The spirit was moving through that event. And I just, you know, I love me some Kirk. Plies looking self. And I just, you know, I enjoyed him. I enjoyed him. And I was grateful for that. That was a bright spot. I redesigned my dining room and living room. And I just worked with a Black interior designer to do that. And, you know, I love spending my money with Black women. So, you know, that was a joy. And yesterday on Sunday, I went to a protest and a public protest in my community. I live in a small rural town in central Pennsylvania. So I wasn't really sure what, you know, protesting would look like in my community. But I went out in all Black and laid in the street for 8 minutes and 42 seconds, like George did until he took his last breath. And I cried and I screamed out for Black folks who are being killed by the state. And I'm glad that I did. I'm glad that I was there. I'm glad that I was in community with other people who are committed to the fight of injustice in this country. And the fight continues because we will resist.
Yeah, for sure. And I was gonna get to the healing that we had yesterday, because one of the things that I've been talking to people about in terms of continuing to resist is that we have to also take a step back. We have to distract, if you will. We have to have moments of joy and finding reprieve in the midst of all the chaos, because if we stay constantly consumed. So one of the things that happened for me is on Wednesday, I made the horrible mistake of getting on social media and getting wrapped up in it, because at that point on Wednesday, it wasn't, we weren't at the protest and the riots yet. We were still just reflecting on the loss. And I was just seeing picture after picture after comment after picture after video. I don't watch videos, and so I didn't see the videos, but just like the constant replaying of it, I saw the reaction of the young lady that was also traumatized by recording the video and how people are like attacking her, saying that she should have done something else. And so like just being completely overwhelmed by just the pain and suffering that all of my friends were experiencing. And I just remember it being so overwhelmed by it, even just a short amount of time, and how there are people who are actually doing that every day and who believe that that is the way for them to stay informed and to stay connected and to be abreast of what's going on. I have to remind people, and I remind any of you like social justice advocates out there, to not do that. Like if you disconnect and unplug for a little while, that doesn't mean that you are a bad Black person or like you're not an activist or you're not into social justice. It just means that you cannot constantly be consuming. Like we were not created to constantly consume a 24/7 news cycle. So taking a step away is the thing that you need to be able to fight and to resist. I also taught a yoga class last night. I didn't want to teach a yoga class last night. I just wanted to sit down and do nothing and be in my feelings and get prepared for this week that I have before me. But I knew that I needed to create space for the warriors who are going out to fight. And so I held that container for those people because I know that's what we need right now. And so the versus thing, that was also my way of just like experiencing a way of healing, because we need that so much. And so all of these opportunities, because I think that some people really do feel like if you're not constantly fighting, you're not fighting at all. And I don't think that that's true. Like, you can't constantly fight. Somebody mentioned that they saw a tweet online that said you have to choose your mental health over activism. No, you don't. If you don't take care of your mental health, you're not going to be able to be an activist. Like, you're going to kill yourself. You're going to drive yourself into the ground. So you have to take care of your mental health because this is traumatizing. Like, these experiences are traumatic. And if we're constantly, we've been constantly living in a state of trauma. And so we have to react to those trauma responses and make sure that we're taking care of ourselves. So the versus battle is amazing. Doing those little things to support Black businesses is amazing. Having a moment of reprieve and taking a step back is so important, because we do have to keep fighting. Like, the revolution is going to be televised and we're going to see it constantly. And the only way that we can continue to show up and keep fighting this fight is that we mentally equip ourselves along the way.
Indeed, indeed. And I'm so grateful for this space, and I hope that our listeners are too. I hope that you feel community and connected with us. It's so funny, like, people will be like, one of our listeners emailed and was like, Auntie Ashley, and I was like, girl, I am young and vibrant. You better call me sister, friend, auntie. Ah! But however you refer to Marcy and I, we hope that you feel connected and that you feel community. You never have to question where our loyalties lie. It's with y'all. It's with y'all. It's with Black folk. And it's with the work. So thanks for listening. So next up is TVT, and Marcy's going to take us through Insecure. I'm an episode behind, Marcy. So if you can avoid spoilers, let me know. You cannot. You're like, no, I can't.
Oh, so we can't even talk about it then, because the whole point is I need to have a dialogue with you about it. So okay, no, we can't talk about it because the whole episode is a spoiler. So the whole episode is a spoiler. Like, you can't.
I just saw something online that said this is maybe the best episode in the season.
It was so good. Like, I will say that it's really good. It makes me feel like everybody has gone to therapy, even though they haven't shown it on the episode at all. But it was such a good episode, and it has me all in my feelings, and I feel extremely conflicted, and I really need to process it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so are you sure? I mean, I guess you can spoil it. Should you want to spoil it? What do you want to do?
No, I don't want to spoil it because I need you to engage in a conversation around it.
Okay, so we'll have to talk about it next week. I apologize. Yeah. I was you know, doing that radical rest thing yesterday. I haven't watched TV in like a week. So besides Versus, that's like the longest I had my phone open. So I will watch it and then we'll talk about it next week. I will say that I did watch last week's episode. So Andrew and Molly's vacation was super cute. I'm like, ooh, I want to go on a New Mexico vacation. I thought it was adorable. And I thought it was interesting that Andrew sided with Molly. I was kind of surprised. His care for her is, she outrageous. But what'd you say, Marcy?
Problematic.
Yeah. he cares for her in a way that I guess every Black girl deserves care. I do worry that he lets her off the hook a ton, but I also recognize the need to sometimes have that compassion come before the correction. So, but yes, we will continue TBT in a more meaningful way next week. But I will say that in the verses yesterday, Kirk Franklin announced that he was putting out a new video for Strong God. I think that it's on his Instagram. So let me see if I can find it, and I will tell you all that you absolutely need to watch it. Yes. So the visual for Strong God is out now. I love this song. It is so, so good. It's such a powerful song. So if you have not listened to, Kirk Franklin's Strong God, please do make sure that you, listen to the song and then check out, Kirk Franklin's Instagram. It's at K-I-R-K Franklin. And check out Strong God. The visual is just in one of his recent posts. And it's so good. It's so powerful. And we do, you know, as a believer, we need a strong God. And more now than ever, the healing will only come through a radical power in Christ and white people's decision to eradicate the world of racism. So the fight does continue. But if you're looking for something to watch, check that out. It's super duper powerful. Thanks so much for listening this week. Thanks so much for rocking with us every week. We're excited about June and all of the things that it's going to bring. So make sure you check out next week's episode. Share School and Life with a Friend. We are looking to grow our listenership. We'll be celebrating 3 years. Oh my gosh, 3 years of School and Life podcast this month. And we're nearing 100,000 downloads. And so we just encourage you to share it with a friend. Let somebody you know that you listen to School and Life podcast and that you love it, and help support us as we're looking to grow our followers and our listenership every week. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week. School's out. Class dismissed.